Hi, I'm Jordan Trimble. I'm the president and CEO of Sky Harbor Resources, listed on the TSX Venture under the symbol SYH, also on the OTC QX under the symbol SYHBF. We are a high-grade uranium explorer and prospect generator with 29 projects scattered throughout the Athabasca Basin in northern Saskatchewan. We've been at it for 10 years. We built up one of the largest project portfolios consisting of over 1.4 million acres across those 29 projects, actively advancing our two co-flagship Russell and Morlake projects. And we have currently seven partner companies advancing seven other projects in our portfolio.
Jordan, good to see you, man. In fact, we met in Toronto at the PDAC conference. Had a good chat there, and I kind of been keen to kind of get you on the show, mostly to kind of help you explain to me, explain to the listeners, the model and how you've constructed this over the last 10 years. But first, tell me a bit about you. What's your background? How'd you get into this game?
Yeah, sure. So I've been working in the mining industry now. It's been almost 14 years, 2010. I just graduated UBC with a degree in science and commerce. I started working, very fortunately, started working at a gold company called Bayfield Ventures. It was run by my chairman, Jim Pettit. Bayfield at the time had, and coming out of the financial crisis, had gold projects in Ontario, exploration gold projects in Ontario, adjacent to what is now the Rainy River Mine. At the time, it was just a big gold deposit. We were successful in 2010 and 2011 in basically proving up the extension of that deposit on one of our claims in the region, one of our mineral claims, and basically took it from a grassroots project right through discovery into resource delineation. And then we were ultimately acquired by New Gold after they had acquired Rainy River, consolidated the region. So we basically, over the course of 3.5-4 years, went through that discovery, successful discovery process, and to ultimate sale to a larger mining company. So I was very fortunate to have joined it when I did quite well financially with it. It was a good win for shareholders. And that was at the time, as a lot of your audience would know, at least a few years after, the mining market had turned over. We saw the commodity prices falling at that point. And it's fortunate we were able to sell Bayfield at that time. We had a shell company in our office, my chairman, again, Jim Pettit, and I, called Sky Harbor Resources. It had some legacy projects in it, but it was at $1.5-2 million valuation, and it was looking for something new. And this was a couple of years after Fukushima. We saw a very contrarian opportunity. I'd say we might have been a few years early, but it was nonetheless, no one was talking about uranium. There were incredible opportunities and assets available in the Athabasca Basin in northern Saskatchewan. So we teamed up with a group of geologists that had just sold a company called JNR Resources to Denison, which we can talk a bit more about that later and what happened there and how that subsequently led to Denison becoming a strategic partner of Sky Harbor and a large shareholder. But they had just sold their company, JNR, to Denison. We teamed up with them, and basically that was the genesis of Sky Harbor. I came in to run the company. So this is just over 10 years ago, about 10 years ago now. That's been my full-time gig ever since, building it from, what was really just a shell company at the time, acquiring the projects that we've acquired over the last decade, carrying out the exploration, building the prospect generator business. And I came from a finance and entrepreneurial background. I'm a CFA charter holder. I was a director of the local society here in Vancouver. I've worked with several other companies, mining companies, throughout my career, but this Sky Harbor has been really my baby, my focus for the last decade.
Right. Okay. Got it. That's the background. Let's try and understand the model next. Okay, because if people go into your deck, they'll be looking at a very large portfolio. You're focused on more on Russell Lake, obviously. Russell Lake, you're digging iron in there with Rio Tinto's project. You've also got a bunch of JV projects and some projects for optioning. So can you sort of maybe break down the terminology there? Because there's a big audience here of perhaps not necessarily au fait with it. So let's talk about the types of projects within the portfolio before we get into the actual model itself?
Sure. So as I mentioned, there's 29 properties all throughout the Athabasca Basin. So I know you're familiar, Matt, with the map of the basin, but you'll see it in our deck. You'll see it on any, you know, uranium company operating in the area. So it's this big sedimentary basin in northern Saskatchewan, highest grade depository of uranium in the world. So we essentially have what is now, the by acreage, the third largest mineral tenure holding in the region. So we've got projects basically scattered all throughout the Athabasca Basin. Some of it, you know, most of the projects are within the sandstone cover, including our two main projects, Russell and Moore. But we've got projects outside of the basin proper. It was a much larger sedimentary basin at one point, so the prospectivity for uranium extends well outside of that current sandstone cover. 29 projects, and yeah, you can think of them as being in, you know, tiers, right? So we've got our more advanced stage exploration assets that either host small uranium deposits, so you do have through Sky Harbor exposure to some pounds in the ground. It's not, these aren't massive deposits. We're ultimately looking to hopefully one day either discover a new very large high-grade uranium deposit or expand the existing resources that we have at a few of these advanced stage exploration projects. So Russell, as you mentioned, is the project that we're the most active at. We're currently drilling 5,000 meters in a winter program. We just optioned this project from Rio Tinto, bringing them in as one of our three larger strategic partners. They're a large shareholder. They'll likely be a project partner at Russell. It's a project that's had lots of exploration historically, widespread drilling, widely spaced drilling. And I think that that's a key feature with the previous work. There's incredible discovery upside potential at the project. We're obviously looking to capitalize on that with our drilling. So that's Russell Lake. And then Moore Lake adjacent, our other co-flagship advanced stage exploration asset. This is actually the most advanced of all of our projects in terms of where it's at in the exploration slash early stage development stage. So it does have a small high-grade deposit called the Maverick deposit. It consists of several high-grade smaller zones of uranium mineralization, shallow and within 270 meters. And it's basically right at the unconformity, a little bit of it in the basement rocks, but most of it sandstone hosted. So that's Moore Lake. And then you can think of the rest of the projects. They vary from much earlier stage grassroots projects that we typically are looking to option or JV out as a part of our prospect generator business. But we do have some more advanced stage exploration projects that are outside of those two main projects. South Falcon East, which is host to a small, shallow, lower grade deposit called the Fraser Lakes Zone B deposit. That's currently under option to one of our partner companies, Tisdale. And basically anything and everything in between. So I guess the easiest way, the simplest way to explain it is you're getting exposure to the full spectrum, if you will, of exploration assets from earlier stage, more grassroots properties, right through to more advanced stage exploration assets that either host small uranium deposits and or high grade, so multi-percent U308 in previous drilling, right? So that's an important feature of some of these other projects as well. We're not going out there hoping that we find, you know, indicator minerals and structure and alteration. There's high grade there. We're looking to expand those high grade zones. And then the way that we create or add value, unlock value with these projects for our shareholders is focus in on the two projects, Russell and Moore, for a variety of reasons, which we can get into, but that's what we are funding currently and looking to make new discoveries and expand existing resources. And then look with the other, you know, 20 plus projects, 25 plus projects, have partner companies come in to advance these projects. And for the audience out there that isn't familiar with prospect generation, what a prospect generator does, you think of it as almost like a tech incubator. What they do with tech companies, you know, they go in and invest and they help these companies grow. We effectively, as a prospect generator, do that with uranium projects in the Athabasca Basin. So we'll go in, we'll acquire it, we'll incubate the project, if you will. We'll do some work there. We'll package it up, and then we look to bring in a partner company that will fund the exploration and advance the project, but also pay us some cash in stock, as they earn in. We typically keep a minority interest and in some cases an NSR royalty on the project. But it's a great hybrid model. Some other companies are doing just this in the basin. I'd say we were really one of the first in the last decade, at least, to really forge ahead with this hybrid model. And as a result of that, in the prospect generator business, and given that we were 10 years ago, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, acquiring these projects at pennies on the dollar, we've been able to, put together a very nice portfolio of partner companies and projects that could see potentially upwards of $80 million in combined project consideration come in. A portion of that has already come in, but a good chunk of that has yet to come in, assuming these companies complete their earnings.
Right. Okay. So, like, I kind of want to start at that end of the conversation, if I can, because it's a much sort of longer term return profile, and there's a lot of things that you've got to get right. And we'll come back to Moore and Russell and your neighbor Denison,
sure,
in a second, because I think that's probably where the quicker gains are to be had. So let's again explain this prospect generator model for those who perhaps are unaware of it. I like your analogy with the kind of incubator, technology incubator. It's easier to understand. Let's break it down into what the different types of deal structures that you can put in place are, because obviously you want to pick good teams who will advance the project. You want to pick good teams who can raise capital to hit their obligations in terms of the drill spend and still survive the vagaries of the public markets. So you're going to advance these projects through to some kind of financial exit or remuneration of a significant kind, rather than just a management fee or NSR at some point in the distance. So can you maybe give an example of a couple of ways that you structure those deals and how you go about selecting the people that you work with? Because I think in this uranium boom that we're going to go through, it'll be like 2010, 8, 9, and 10 again, because we went from 50 companies to 500 companies because everyone wanted to dive and jump on the bandwagon. How do you make sure you're not picking up time wasters?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. That's definitely become a much more prominent issue for us as a prospect generator. So, okay, because I know there are a number of other companies that employ this hybrid model. I think it's important to emphasize that to be able to do this effectively, you do need to have a pretty decent sized inventory of projects, right? So a new company coming in to the Athabasca or anywhere for that matter with one or two projects cannot become a prospect generator, needless to say. They don't have the inventory of projects to do that with. One of the benefits we have, as I mentioned, is having started the company as uranium company 10 years ago, being especially the first 4, 5, 6 years where, again, these projects, we're able to buy them at really just, fire sale prices, if you will. And so that afforded us the opportunity then to, in the latter years, in the most recent, 4 or 5 years, to execute on this prospect generator business with good assets, right? And so an example of a transaction, typically they're structured. There's lots of different ways you can structure it, right? And there's a lot of strategy that goes into that. But typically you'll structure it as an earn-in option agreement. So basically the company, it's a farm-in whereby the partner company, the optionee comes in and has to spend over, typically 3 to 5 year period, X number of dollars, call it $1 million, $2 million in exploration that they have to fund at the project. Then they have to make cash and share payments annually as well. Again, there's lots of different ways you can, they're very flexible structures. There's a lot of kind of optionality baked into that. And so what we've done with Sky Harbor, our typical option structure will be that 3 to 5 years. Usually at least several million dollars in exploration. For example, our largest option agreement is at a project called South Falcon East. This is an advanced stage exploration asset host to a small deposit right at surface. So there's pounds in the ground there. It's a project that we've actually spent our own money on in recent years and, view it as a more advanced stage project within the broader portfolio. So in that earn-in, it's a 5-year earn-in. for up to 75%. It's a staged earn-in, so there's an initial 51, and then they can go to Tisdale, can go to 75. And in order to do that, they have to spend $10.5 million in exploration and another about $11 million in cash and stock. And so that's over the period of 5 years. You know, but it's a, you know, it's well over $20 million in combined project consideration. Now, most of them, the other six, for example, option agreements that we've signed are not, you know, of that, call it cash and share payment size, nor exploration expenditure requirement. But they're also, you know, in some cases, earlier stage projects too. So that just gives you an idea of what a typical earn-in option agreement would look like. So at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is make sure the projects, these secondary projects in our portfolio, are advanced without us having to go to market and raise lots of money to do the work. To give you a sense of the one of the benefits of this prospect generator business, we haven't done a hard dollar financing, a private placement, hard dollar private placement since August of 2020. So almost 4 years. I think very few other exploration companies, mineral exploration companies, can say that. A part of that is the fact that we've been able to bring in cash, been able to monetize a portion of these secondary projects, which has helped us keep the equity dilution in check. We've been able to basically just fund our exploration at Russell and Moore and at some of the other projects through flow through financings at premium. So that's one of the benefits. But really, at the end of the day, it's about having another company come in, advance the project, so we then have some exposure. If they're successful, they make a big high-grade discovery, you know, they find the next Arrow deposit or Cigar Lake or MacArthur or even, you know, something smaller, right? We benefit by owning equity in the company. We benefit by typically retaining a minority interest in the project. And in some cases, we will have an NSR. And look, if they do not complete the earn-ins, at the very least, right, at the very least, they've probably spent some money in the field on the project. And in Saskatchewan, the holding costs, if you will, for the projects, it's a little bit different than what you'd have in the United States and some other jurisdictions, but you have to spend money in the field. You don't pay any government organization or body cash directly, but you actually have to spend money in exploration, right? And so at the very least, the claims get, they have money spent on them, and they're in good standing for us to do what we will thereafter. So, you know, that's a worst case scenario if they don't earn in, for example. So just to summarize our prospect generator business, seven partners at seven other projects, three of those seven have now completed their earn in. So we're three of seven currently, and we're now joint venture partners with Azincourt, with Valor, which is an ASX-listed company, and one of our three strategic partners, France's largest uranium mining and nuclear fuel company, Orano, and we're JV partners with them at the Preston project. And then we have another four companies that are still actively earning in. So as I said, potentially upwards of $80 million, about $35 million of that in exploration funding, the other $45 million in cash and in stock. Again, I want to just emphasize they have to complete the earnings. I think a good way to think of this, and I don't think this gets talked about enough with the prospect generator business model, think of it as as the market improves, right? Let's say uranium price continues to march higher. That $80 million is more likely to be realized, right? In a challenging market, we'll just call a spade, less of that $80 million is coming in, right? Whether it's the project funding, the cash, or the share. So it also is kind of a lot of people like to think of it as a risk mitigation strategy. And it is that, like, for example, we haven't had to raise as much money in equity financings, and we have other people coming in to do the work. But it's also, it does kind of work as in a sliding scale fashion, where as the market improves, the prospect generator business is going to pay more dividends.
Okay, so with some of those projects, you choose to do, you know, earnings up to 75%, 80%, some cases 100%. I mean, yeah. How do you define the kind of risk profile and what you prefer having? So like, say North Shore, Medora, right?
Yeah.
You know, 100% interest earnings, right, from them. So why give away 100%? Are you less sure of those? Or is it a case of at that moment in time, you're a little bit desperate, you need the cash, and you'll do whatever deal you need to do? I mean, as it were.
It's a good question. So typically on those, so we do have two, for example, where we've elected or negotiated, if you will, with them to provide them basically a balloon payment at the end of the initial 51 or 70 or 80%. So it's a staged earn-in. And I will say there's pros and cons of you know, both, right? And this ties in with the question about vetting the partners. Yeah, I mean, look, we needless to say, we have to make sure we're getting into bed with partners that can raise capital, have a good geological team. We do. Our geological team will collaborate and work with them, but typically they're the operator. We want to stay focused at our main projects. We think there's much more value for us to unlock corporately at our best our more advanced stage exploration projects. So we want to keep our geos and our technical team, you know, tied up with those projects, and then have the other companies come in and do the heavy lifting of these projects at the secondary projects. But we will work with them. And so in the case of the 100% buyout, that's just a feature that we can add. And one of the benefits of that is, and for what it's worth, we have this same feature at our Russell Lake project with Rio Tinto. That was something that we actually wanted and negotiated with Rio on, because it gives us, and it gives, or the other partner company of ours, it gives them the option to, you know, buy it out completely. Now, a part of that balloon payment is a big equity payment, a big stock payment, right? So it's not necessarily us just giving the project away. In return, we become a very, very large shareholder. And in some cases, we will retain an NSR too. So we still have that. So it really just depends on, you know, what the negotiations, what the other company's looking for. I'd say, you know, both options, there's pros and cons to each. If you do buy 100% in that balloon payment option format, you typically, it comes with a big equity stake as well.
Okay. So I guess, like, discussions and negotiations, which are happening in 2020 and into 2021, are going to be very different from today. The uranium market is a very, very different place. Okay. So I do understand that. And then just in terms of breaking down that 80 million, for instance, so you're talking there about three kind of sums. One is the exploration expenditure, which the more they spend exploring, the better chance of success. And so that you want that number to be meaningful, obviously. A cash sum to you, which is obviously, you talk about flow through, which you did back in December and on previous occasions. But the cash sum means that you're not having to go to market and raise, you know, hard dollars as well. So I understand that. And then, of course, getting stock in the other company. This does tie in a bit more closely with make damn sure you're picking the right team to partner with, because
absolutely,
you know, with that stock high now, and then, you know, having been decimated in two, three years, right?
You're spot on with that. I mean, look, the more equity that we're taking ultimately in the company, the more we want to be assured we're, you know, it's the right partner company. Absolutely,
for sure. Okay, so that's really kind of cool. That's a big chunk of money on assets that you have picked up for not too many cents on the dollar, wherever you pick them up.
Just to give you a sense of that, and the disconnect, if you will, that we saw when we started Sky Harbor and we were acquiring these projects. We acquired two projects in our portfolio for, I believe it was about $200,000 in stock and $25,000 in cash. I believe it was in 2014. So it was, you know, within the first year that we had started building up Sky Harbor's uranium company. We've since signed option agreements, one of which is now a joint venture, but we've since signed four option agreements so we've split those two projects up into four projects. The option agreements on those underlying projects total to, I think, well over 50 million in combined project consideration. So this was the kind of the intriguing part to us coming into this sector when we did 10 years ago, was it was just so beat up. And now it's not to say that I don't want to give the impression that, you know, valuations are crazy high. In fact, they're not. If you look at it where we are relative to 06, 07, another good kind of comparison. So 06, 07, four of the projects in our portfolio, including those two, Moore Lake and South Dufferin, which we own 100% of, we acquired from Denison a year ago. That's on trend of the Centennial deposit. Those four projects in 07 were in a JNR, the company that my geological team ran. That was the basis for a $350, almost $400 million valuation, just those four. So we have those four back, and we have another 25 on top of those.
No, I like the prospect generator model. It just takes, sometimes it can take a long time to play out, and sometimes people don't actually see it within your current vehicle because they get spun out or they're JV'd, and perhaps the remuneration or the value gain is a bit harder to see, as it were. It's there, but it's a bit harder to see.
Yeah.
So, okay, I get it. So, because most people would be looking at this, okay, cash, I understand you get cash, and stock, as long as the stock holds its value or grows, then I can definitely see that. The I guess the exploration expenditure is really about backing up the ability to grow, for there to be a growth story there, and hopefully they can get to the end of their option term.
Yeah.
Perfect. Love it. For people new to this game, that's a really good explanation from you. Let's go back and talk about the two joint flagship projects, which is obviously Moore and Russell, right? And I obviously mentioned Denison sort of pretty close by as well. It all kind of helps in terms of the neurology thesis. So tell me a little bit about how you're developing each. You raised was 6.3, something like that, in flow through in December. I don't know where that puts you in terms of cash today. What are you doing with that money on both of those projects?
Yeah, so we raised the 6.3, 6.4 million at, it was a charity flow through, critical metal flow through financing. So there's basically three premiums that get baked into it, whereby, so we were trading around 50 cents. We were able to raise it at 77 cents. And so that just shows you the kind of premium, less dilution, lower cost of capital, which is great. It was just a few funds that are well-known in the space, great supporters, and know the sector very, very well. So good group of shareholders that came in as well. And so that basically covers us for the full 2024 season of drilling that we have planned at these two co-flagship projects, Russell and Moore. So just taking a quick step back, Russell and Moore, if you think of MacArthur River Mine on a map, and then the Key Lake Mill to the south, basically the road that connects the mine with the mill, a good chunk of that runs right up through Russell, the western claims of Russell. So that's it's both projects collectively represent, you know, big property package. I think collectively they're about 270,000 acres of ground. Wedged between the MacArthur River Mine project, owned and operated by Cameco, the Key Lake Mill, which is MacArthur to the north, Key Lake to the southwest. And then very importantly for us is Wheeler River, Denison's flagship project. You've had Dave on, and he's talked a lot about Wheeler. And so if you think of Wheeler on the map, basically all the claims to the north, to the east, and to the south of Wheeler are Russell. And so a lot of the drill targets that we're drill testing currently are, you know, within 5 kilometers of the Phoenix deposit, right? And so needless to say, they've been our largest corporate and strategic shareholder since 2016. Dave joined as a director in 2016, a very important part of our board. He's become a large shareholder personally. He's, I think, the second largest shareholder within the insider group behind myself, having purchased those shares in financings. We had this project in our crosshairs for a number of years, and we finally were able to negotiate what I think is a very fair and flexible earn and option agreement with Rio Tinto. And a part of that is Rio has now become a large shareholder of Sky Harbor. The earn in allows us, much like we were talking, where we're the optioner, we're now the optionee. And the earn in allows us to earn up to 100%. But there's an initial 51% that we're basically pretty much complete now. We've got, when we'll wrap up this winter drill program, we'll have spent the necessary exploration expenditures. And then we can go to 70 through some more exploration and some cash and share payments. And then we have this balloon payment option at the end to buy them out completely. So again, there's a lot of flexibility within the earn-in at Russell. So Russell was historically explored by Hathor, and then Rio Tinto bought out Hathor. Really, there was most of the drilling, most of the exploration carried out from basically 2002 to 2016. At that point in 2016, uranium prices hit a low. Rio Tinto decided you know what, we're gonna put the uranium assets on the back burner for the time being. So there really hasn't been a lot of recent exploration or drilling at the project, but there's been, as I said earlier, widespread drilling, fairly widely spaced drill fences, but widespread mineralization across the project at numerous target areas. And that's what really interested us with the project, was you had widely spaced drill fences, in some cases 400, 500, 600 meters apart, or even more. And you had both fences being mineralized, not necessarily with high grade mineralization, but you know, you're getting pretty good anomalous mineralization at the unconformity, in some cases of a little bit above it. Not a lot of drilling carried out into the underlying basement rocks either. So we figured, you know what, this project would fit so nicely into our portfolio. Obviously, it's very strategically located. You benefit with the road, you benefit with the power lines. There's an exploration camp there that we've inherited from Rio Tinto. That all adds up. We were talking about this offline. Our drilling costs at Russell, and now as a result of having Russell at the adjacent Moore Lake project, are very, very, very low. $300 to $350 Canadian all in a meter. To give some perspective on that, a lot of other more remote projects in the basin, fly in, fly out, you're double that at least. I know some projects that are, you know, $800, $900, $1,000 all in a meter. So we can drill it very inexpensively. We can drill it all year round. And a number of the targets in this 5,000 meters, there's three targets that we're drill testing, as I mentioned earlier, close to Denison's Wheeler River project. A number of these targets have mineralization, and we believe there is at least one big high-grade deposit yet to be discovered at the project. And that's what we're looking to deliver. So, you know, that's a near-term catalyst, this initial 5,000 meters in this program. We'll have results. We've got assays pending. We're just wrapping it up. So we'll finish the program, assays pending, news flow coming out in the next several months. And then we're fully funded and permitted to go right back in there in the summer. And we'll likely do another 5,000 to 6,000 meters of drilling at Russell in probably June, July, right through into September, October, continue. And target selection will be based on the results from this program. But there's no lack of targets there. And it is still relatively shallow at most target areas at the project, within 500 meters, within, or a lot of it actually within 400 meters. So that's important to us. And so collectively, call it 10,000 to 12,000 meters of drilling earmarked, fully funded at Russell this year. Lots of news flow from that. At the adjacent Moore Lake project, we've just wrapped up a 3,000-meter winter program that is a little bit different than what we're doing at Russell. So at Moore Lake, as I mentioned, a project that we've had in our portfolio since 2016. We actually acquired it from Denison Mines. We own 100% of it. And it's a more advanced stage exploration project. So there are high-grade zones of mineralization. Our best previous drill result was 21% U308 over a meter and a half. That was within 6% over 6 meters. In more recent years, we've had success drilling into the basement rocks, because most of the historical drilling was shallow down to about 260 to 280 meters where the unconformity is and where the high grade known mineralization is. So we, for example, in 2020 and 2021, made a new high grade discovery in what's called the East Maverick Zone in the basement rocks. And that drill intercept included 6.8% over U3 over 2 meters. And so that was a great result in a new area, new target below the unconformity. So 3,000 meters that we've just completed at Moore Lake, and we'll probably drill another 3,000 meters this summer. So 15,000 to 20,000 meters collectively combined across both of those projects, relatively inexpensive to drill. Looking to make a big new high-grade discovery at Russell. At Moore Lake, we're looking really in this program and the upcoming summer program to expand an infill drill in those high-grade zones.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. Drill, drill, drill. But if I look at how companies get values, you know, you've been sitting and teetering under, you know, $100 million, which I think a lot of your peers might be envious with. But in terms of the companies that really kind of move on from that and do that step change is discoveries, right? So there are companies that have been explorers who have actually said, well, actually, We can't make discoveries. We haven't been able to make discoveries. We're going to the prospect generator model, which you've got, and you explain why that kind of funds itself and there's upside. For you guys and this drilling, what's the emphasis with all of this drilling? What type of drilling? Why are you going where you're going? Because I think at a point, the grade itself doesn't answer the question. It's about grade and how can you hang a resource on it, you know, post this discovery. So in terms of your teams, how are you instructing your team to move forward with this allocation of capital? Because I think headline grabbing is not enough if you're to make that step change. I know you're conscious of this, so tell me what that looks like this year as part of that drill program.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I think, again, we'll talk Russell and then more. So Russell, the objective at Russell, as I pointed out, it's, you know, it's still in the, you know, that earlier part of the Lassonde curve, right? Whereby, yes, there's mineralization. There has been some drilling historically where there's multi-percent, but over very skinny widths. So we are looking to be the, you know, the company that comes in and successfully delivers a new high grade discovery, right? And so that's important. And that is, you know, a big potential catalyst. That would be a massive development for us and our shareholders. It's one thing making a big discovery in the middle of nowhere and it's remote and, you know, that's great. Look, discoveries in the basin, there's a reason why the exploration is the most exciting type of exploration there is out there, because these are massive high grade deposits. The return potential, as you well know, is extraordinary with these high grade deposits. But you know, there are other factors and variables that you have to consider. And Russell, given its proximity to basically, we're drilling right off of one of the only roads in the region, proximity to Cameco and Denison and Orano and other larger operators in the area, making a new discovery there is, you know, would be a massive development for the company. So that's Russell. And I think I like to emphasize too, there's drill ready projects and then there's discovery ready projects. And there's lots of drill ready projects where, you know, exploration companies, are going in. Really, at the end of the day, the expectation in most of those, I mean, look, maybe you pull the rabbit out of the hat and you hit something early on that's high grade and big. More than likely, you're looking for, you know, structure alteration, specific types of, you know, indicator minerals. Maybe you get some anomalous uranium, right? They're drill ready, right? You can go and drill them, but they're not necessarily discovery ready. And Russell Lake is very much a discovery ready project in that any next drill hole, you know, could deliver that big high grade hit. We have all the right ingredients that you need to see at a project to know that it can potentially host a big high grade deposit, and it's got the right address, as we discussed. So that's Russell. Moor Lake, again, a little bit different because yes, there are several high grade zones of uranium mineralization, pearls on the string. They're not big, right? It's not a 100+ million pound. Deposit by any stretch of the imagination. Now, it is open at depth, in particular in the basement rocks and along strike. It's not a big, these aren't big zones of high grade mineralization, but there is still some room for expansion, which we're looking to do this year. We're working on a resource estimate at that deposit as well, which will come out later this year. But what's actually really interesting right now for Moor Lake with us, given the uranium price increase, it's shallow sandstone-hosted mineralization. So yes, it isn't the biggest deposit in the basin, but there are two new mining methods in the Athabasca Basin from surface that are quite interesting. Obviously, one being ISR with Phoenix, right, with Denison, and the other one, Sabre, which is specific to the Athabasca Basin. Again, that's Denison and Orano up at McLean Lake, and they're going to be producing this year using Sabre. Now, we don't have any official studies on this, but I can say that, what we have at the Maverick, couple Maverick high-grade zones that we have at Moor Lake, it becomes interesting, even though it's not big, with one of those two mining methods now being used in the Athabasca Basin. And so... You know, that's something that I you know, we're evaluating more this year. It's part of the reason that we're drilling infill and expansion drilling right at the main high grade zones versus more exploratory drilling regionally at the project. You know, it's something to keep an eye out on over the next several years, especially as the uranium price moves higher.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I can take away from PDAC was some of the new technologies being engaged with, but mostly on the finding side,
right?
You know, as in, you know, because I think people are finding new ways to perhaps interpret data, which is great, and AI may be a part of that finally. If you've got lots of millions of data points, but the actual technology around actually where you should be drilling and what you're looking at when you're downhole, and you know, can you get more data out of each hole? I think that'll be really interesting, and certainly interesting for exploration companies in terms of trying to be more efficient, because goodness knows you're being hammered every which way. So all efficiencies are welcome for sure.
I was just on a panel at a conference last week with a few other peer group companies talking about just this. And yeah, and look, there are new techniques, new methodologies that, you know, much better geophysics, much better knowledge of the rocks, looking in the base, looking in new geological settings there, compared to where we were 30 or 40 years ago, and at, you know, MacArthur Cigar Lake discoveries, right, which, you know, involved hundreds of very deep drill holes looking to, you know, find the proverbial needle in the haystack. We have a lot more tools at our disposal now to vector in on, you know, on these deposits in the basin. It's still not easy. I don't want to give the impression that, you know, it's you go out there and you drill and you hit and it's, you know, it's easy to do. It is not, but that's a part, that's why you have good geological teams, you have good contractors, good drillers, and you have to build that up to improve the chances of success.
Okay, one of the other things that, and I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And manning stuff for sure. One of the other things that companies have struggled with over the last few years, certainly juniors anyway, is access to capital. Ugh. Right, and the type of capital and the cost of capital, etc. Uranium has been on a bit of a run for the last year, but especially the last 6 months. Reset for a little breather at the moment, but I'm sure it will go again. Is with your ability to, you've done the land grab bit. I think that's kind of an interesting part of the model here. Is there's a big sort of land grab that's gone on at the right time, contrarian moment in time. And going forward, you're partnering a JV, you're optioning, and that will fund a lot of that land package being moved forward with your own projects. Obviously, the charity flow through money December, very useful. Do you think that the market's there for you to continue to be able to go to market on Russell and Moore to help you move those to the next stage? Because I think where people see quicker value is if they do make their own discoveries, if they do go through the phases on the economic studies, and you can paint a picture of lots of powers in the ground, which will come out of the ground, you get that value. So, but being cash constrained doesn't help, and the market has, unfortunately, been cash constrained. Do you see sort of the ability to access cash more readily now because where uranium has moved to?
Yeah, I mean, look, for sure, it certainly relative to where it was, you know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, but you know, it's still, you're right. I mean, look, this is still a challenging business to be in. It's high risk. You know, it's specific pools of capital, right, that have come in, and you know, as I mentioned earlier, we were fortunate in December with you know, just several strategic institutional investors that know the space very, very well.
Timing, you could have timed it better.
Yeah, well, frankly. But you know, I think you know, a number of them were existing shareholders too, right? And so you know, look, timing's always challenging, obviously, to kind of, you know, pick the perfect timing, if you will. But you know, we knew we were going to be spending money at Russell and Moore. We think there is a lot of value we can unlock at both of those projects, as I just went through. You know, going forward, we're fully funded right now. As I mentioned, we've got a very healthy treasury with well over $7 million. We get cash and stock coming in on an annual basis from the partner companies, as I went through. That typically, at least based off of the option terms, it, you know, it accelerates in later years. But we're getting $1.5 million to $2 million a year from that, which covers.
What time of year?
It's scattered throughout. It just depends on the anniversary.
Okay.
Yeah. So it comes in.
Okay.
It actually comes in kind of throughout the year, typically speaking. And then, you know, look, yeah, if we're successful with the drilling at Russell and with the drilling at Moore, and or if one of our partner companies is successful with the work and the drilling they're doing, you will see obviously, a much higher valuation, a lower cost of capital as a result of that. And you know, it's a win-win-win, right? And, you know, that's maybe something else to highlight is, you know, it's not just Russell and Moore that we're exploring, that we're drilling. Of the seven partner companies, at least five of them this year are going to be either drilling or carrying out work. In fact, right now, both our JV partners, Orano and Azincourt, are carrying out field programs that we're participating in as JV minority JV partner at each of those. And then both Tisdale and North Shore have either completed their inaugural drill programs, assays pending, and or are in the middle of a multi-phase drill program, as Tisdale is at South Falcon East. So there's multiple irons in the fire. There's the potential for any one of these to pay off significantly, or several of them. And that's, you know, that was a kind of a philosophy that we developed over a number of years, where you've got this hybrid model where we want to go, our, you know, best case scenario, we find a major new deposit at Russell. It's a big payoff. It completely changes our story for the better. But, you know, we have these kind of free, these call options, if you will, on some of these other projects that, you know, many one of them successful, it's a big win for us and our shareholders.
I hear you. Can I just ask you though, sure enough, you don't mind, the cash payments, are we cash payments? That's liquid, right? As and when they come in.
Yeah.
Great. Semi-liquid is the share issuance, which I assume gets, I don't know if it's equitably over the period of the option term or if it ramps up. But however, are you held during the term of the option term, or can you sell down at any point?
So
as you receive them,
it depends on the option. Pretty much all of them, there's a standard 4-month hold, as there would be with any typical financing or share issuance in that case. Our mandate with that is, and strategy with that is, we actually want to maintain as large an equity position as we can in these partner companies, for the very reasons I just discussed, which are, it's not, sure, it's nice having some liquidity, if you will, if you need it. We haven't needed to, you know, dip into that really at all. We've been able to raise the money when we need it, and with the cash payments coming in. But we want to have some exposure and offer our investors exposure to these other companies. I mean, that's a great, you know, feature of Sky Harbor is, you're not just buying direct exposure to our portfolio of projects, our exploration. You're also getting exposure to a handful of other junior companies active in the basin through our equity holdings in those companies. So typically where there is a situation where, you know, we would have to lighten a position is if, for example, we would be going over 10%, right? And so, you know, in that case, there's a share issuance coming up, and you know, we got to stay below 10%. But needless to say, we're not just dumping shares, right? We will manage that accordingly and work with the partners on that. In practice, given our strategy, we want to have as much equity exposure as we can in the event that, you know, they are successful in with their exploration and there's a massive new discovery,
right.
That stock's worth a lot of money to us and our shareholders, right?
Right. So you've sold some shares, but you want to hold on as much as you can because you want the future upside, because you think uranium's going to move through the phases. Yeah.
And like I said, when we sell, it's usually because the 10%, that's kind of really the main reason. I mean, you know, if the market really rips higher, then, you know, we might look to, but we're not really, like, it's not really used as a, you know, source of liquidity. We haven't used it as a source of liquidity.
Yeah. And you haven't sort of gone after hard dollar raises either. So the charity flow through is
part of this too. We've had warrants come in as well. I think that, you know, if you look at, and we've, you know, you can see that with some of the announcements. So, you know, we've had warrants that have also, you know, helped with the hard dollar component. And, you know, warrants only come in if they're in the money, right? So the stock has to, obviously the company has to perform well for that to happen.
Right. And I promise the last finance question this time is for 2024, what's your total expectation of what either has come in or will come in for the rest of the year? What's the total quantum for this year?
With the prospect generator business, I'd say probably, you know, we're getting about $1.5 million to $2 million in cash and stock a year. So, I'd say that's probably reasonable. Again, you know, it does depend on the market conditions, right? I mean, it's very much linked to, you know, how good the uranium market's doing or not, you know, companies' ability to raise money and finance the projects as well as make the payments. We work with our partners too. I think, you know, that's another thing, you know, I want to emphasize is, you know, these are working relationships. We want to be a good partner with them. We want to work.
Yeah. You don't want to kill them.
No, exactly. Like we want it to be collaborative. We want to work with them, you know, with the actual option agreement and the JV ultimately when it becomes that, but also working with them directly as they carry out their exploration.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Right, Jordan, I've kind of got enough out of this. So it was nice to kind of hear you talk through that. It's very clear plan, very clear strategy. Now, go off and make a discovery.
Well, we're hard at work at that, and we're confident at, you know, that we will at Russell. We've got a great overarching strategy with the company. It's, you know, it's a multi-project portfolio, as we've talked about, a very catalyst-rich story this year, well-funded, and a lot to look forward to for the remainder of the year.
Sweet. Jordan, appreciate your time. I'll see you soon.
Thank you, and we'll see you soon.